Hello and welcome back to the Masonic Roundtable, a weekly program where Masons from around the world get together to talk about Masonic news and opinions in a friendly and social manner. As a reminder, the thoughts and opinions expressed here are solely the opinions of the participants and do not represent any Grand Lodge statements or positions. Make sure you keep your conversations open for the public and on the level. To interact with us, we love chatting with you every week, so hop on over to our Facebook feed, hello and good evening to Facebook, or onto the YouTube feed, salutations. You know me, my name is John Ruark, and I'm a past master of the Patriot Lodge in Fairfax, Virginia. What's that? Patriot Lodge number 1957, Fairfax, Virginia. Happy to be here. Let's head over to our next guest, which is guest host. Who's this guy? Jason Richards. Good evening.
Good evening, John. Hey, everybody. Jason Richards here, past master of Vacation Lodge number 16 in Clifton, Virginia, and member of the Colonial Lodge number 1821 in Washington, D.C.
Awesome.
And hopefully by next month, member of another lodge, but I won't jinx it. So
that's right.
Just have to wait and see.
Leave us in suspense. Yep. All right. Next up, Joe Martinez. Good evening.
Hello.
Bobbing and weaving.
Joe Martinez. Let's see. What lodge am I from this week? I am from Internet Lodge number 9659 of the United Grand Lodge of England. Happy to be here.
Under the jurisdiction of the Grand Lodge of England. United Grand Lodge of England.
I said
which
that.
Which is though. Why you will never join OES.
Ding, ding, ding.
Spot on, my friend. Spot on.
All right. Last but not least.
Beautiful loophole.
So far tonight, we have the one, the only, Juan Sepulveda. Good evening.
Good evening, everyone. Juan Sepulveda here from Orange Blossom Lodge at number 80, and the brother behind the Gentleman's Brotherhood.com. Good to see you all tonight.
Can I just say, at the outset of this episode, how amazing it is that the four of us color-coordinated our ensembles.
Look at that. We got a uniform and everything.
You guys
if
are
you
all
look
in t-shirts.
Under your chairs.
This was literally the first time I wore a collar, and everybody else was wearing collars and buttons, and I was like, I'm going to spruce it up tonight, and you guys look like schlubs.
Jokes on, too.
Joe, this is how you know you're trying too hard.
I always try too hard.
Quick,
you're
going
to need to tone
it
down. You're going to need to tone it down before Juan leaves the show.
Yes. How come? You all went with t-shirts? I'll go first. My Taino waterfall is in full effect. So there's no taming it.
My Memento Mori special. So
nice.
I'm actually wearing my long sleeve company t-shirt.
Who are not a sponsor of the show, and therefore will remain below.
We're not going to talk about it.
Oh my God, no.
All right, before we get into tonight's episode, we have two special announcements. First one, thank you very much for the patrons who've been supporting the show over the years. You guys are awesome for getting this tech and equipment going, hosting costs and all that jazz. I want to thank you very much from the bottom of our hearts. And if you'd like to support the show, head on over to patreon.com/themasonicroundtable. And we love to see you over in our little private space where we get to talk about nerdy esoteric stuff. So that'd be fun. Second thing, free to everyone, is something that we are rolling out as early as, what is this? Next week, we have the Found Symbol, host of the Masonic Roundtable, will be doing a show-by-show analysis of the symbols, Masonic signs and pictures and cool things hidden inside of Dan Brown's The Lost Symbol on Peacock, which will be airing Thursday, September 16th. So the day of the show, the day the episode comes out, there will be, a probably 10-part miniseries or so. So every Thursday, coincidentally with TMR, we'll also have a separate show. So the way you can find that out, tune in at 10:45 p.m. Eastern. We usually go till about 10:30 Eastern live every week. We will do another live episode right after TMR, 15 minutes or so, to let us get everything switched over. And we'd love to see you there so you too can nerd out on all the hidden secrets found in The Lost Symbol. I'm excited. I'm super excited about that.
I am too. For all those complaining about it's late. Listen, 90% of you are just going to work in your underwear and your jammies, so I don't want to hear it. So
you're going to binge TikTok anyway. You might as well just
join correct.
Us. Yeah.
Yep. Business up top, draws on the bottom.
That's right. That's why
it's Joe. The best buttoned. Thing about virtual masonry.
That's why Joe buttoned up. Indeed.
I won't
he's
be
actually
up.
Going commando.
Yeah. there's a mental image I didn't need. Okay, let's get into tonight's topic before we lose everyone. Tonight's topic is...
Let's thank our patrons.
We did, because they're awesome.
Well, we should thank them again.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You guys are awesome.
Gracias.
Okay, tonight's topic
is Grand Lodges. So, we've talked a little bit about the history of various Grand Lodges, our own Mother Grand Lodges, for example, and how they were formed and all that. But now we're going to get more onto the administrative side and really deconstruct what are the rules, the regulations, how they operate within themselves, how they operate with other Grand Lodges and appendant bodies. So tonight we're going to explore the mechanics behind this whole unique system that we have that governs all of the Masons inside of a territory or jurisdiction. So Juan, why don't you kind of give us just a 10,000-foot view of, like, what is a Grand Lodge or a Grand Line, and what do they do? 10,000-foot view.
Sure. If you think about the individual Mason, that's the person or that's part of the community, right? Then you have some type of organization for a local group of them, and that's your lodge. That would be the equivalent of having a mayor. And then you have a Grand Lodge. And here in the States, every state has its own Grand Lodge. So that would be the equivalent of having a governor or the office of the governor. So
it's a governing body or a board of directors, essentially.
Yep. That's a good explanation. So the purpose of it, of course, is to create some sort of synchronicity among all the members of that community. In other countries, there are Grand Lodges that are over an entire country. And also, appendant bodies have Grand Lodges or Grand Offices or whatever you want to call that, Grand Encampments and the like. And their job is to also, in a harmonious way, try to keep everything functioning in a standard, homogeneous kind of way. So that would be, I think, a high-level explanation of what a Grand Lodge is.
Right. So it's the administrative overhead. It's the high-level one. Joe?
Oh, yeah. No, I think...
If I don't mind, if you don't mind, there's one thing that I missed on that.
Oh, yeah?
In the allegory or the analogy with the government is that, in theory, it's intended to do things that the local government perhaps doesn't have the resources to do. So some of the larger projects, if you think about our government, you have the governor perhaps or the president in this country. Mm-hmm. Those three branches of government at that level, they handle some of the things that the local states perhaps can't do on their own or need some help in doing.
Right.
Just remember, kids, per capita is theft.
Taxes. Taxation.
I want that on a t-shirt. So, someone make that right now. Go ahead, Joe.
Zazzle. No, I was just going to, I think Juan touched on it beautifully. I think the one big thing that Grand Lodges do, whether it's at a state level, and we'll talk about why we don't have one here in the United States, a national level Grand Lodge, and why some countries have, like Juan said, some entire countries have Grand Lodges, but some break it up by districts or by provinces, things like that. So it's sort of akin to how they do things here in the United States. But the big thing with a grand body for Masonry has to do with sovereignty, right? That they're basically saying that they are allowed to make Masons or make members of appendant bodies in that jurisdiction and in that jurisdiction alone. And, okay, so sorry.
Let's break that down because you loaded two terms. You loaded in the term sovereignty and jurisdiction. Let's deconstruct that for those who aren't familiar. What is sovereignty?
So I think I covered that one, unless I missed some tidbits. So sovereignty is the ability to make masons within a jurisdiction. The United States is unique because we don't have a single Grand Lodge per state, right? Well, we have our Prince Hall brethren.
That's what I was hoping to elaborate on, is that sovereignty isn't just making masons per state. It's that they are responsible for all the activities within an area. Okay, and so that means
and the people in that area.
Exactly. And yeah. So what that means
and
is
that area is the jurisdiction.
Right. So we call the area of which that person has control, or that Grand Lodge has control over, a jurisdiction. So when you hear us use jurisdiction, it's just the geographic area that is in the bounds of their control or their authority. Sovereignty also mean that it does have the ability to make decisions on their own, right?
Now it is important to note that, you know, we're not talking about like irregular and clandestine Grand Lodges, which are usually relatively small, confined to a part of a city, and in some cases
between because there's Street.
Yes, there is something to be said about Freemasonry being essentially the United Nations. And how you know you're legitimate is who you recognize and who recognizes you in return. Mm-hmm. And so you have all of these independent sovereign bodies operating throughout the world. And it's like the Masonic United Nations.
UN.
And exactly. So you have your Grand Lodge, whether it be, the regular standard Grand Lodge or the Prince Hall Grand Lodge in the U.S. And, that regularity, ultimately there's a lineage and your Grand Lodge got their charter from another Grand Lodge, et cetera. But it's all about who recognizes who is legitimate.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about the jurisdiction. So in the United States, it's pretty easy to find out where jurisdictional lines are or the regional lines. In the United States, it's pretty easy. It's usually done by the state level. And the reason is, although Freemasonry predates the founding of the United States of America, it kind of got its Grand Lodge starts about the same time as the colonies and the Revolution. So it was just easy to say, we were forming a state. Great. We're going to form our Masonry within this boundary as well. And so that has evolved where every state now has its jurisdictional lines kind of that way. So when you are in Virginia, for example, you are under the auspices of the Grand Lodge of Virginia and all the Masons in Virginia.
I wanted to mention also, when you talk about sovereignty, another way to visualize it, imagine in my state of Florida, if all of a sudden there's a little inlet and they create some a wall there, and they declare, okay, this is the new country of Severland. Okay, within this territory, you can't put a flag and establish it as belonging to any other country. You can't establish your own country within, or your own state within the state. The state of Florida has the authority to control all the resources, all the efforts, all the response, everything that is associated with keeping the populace healthy, thriving. It's the responsibility of the state. So with jurisdictions like this, if, for example, we have the Grand Lodge of Florida, free and accepted Masons of Florida. Now, there are other groups that have claimed to be Masons, and they have basically put their flags down in Florida. And I'm not talking about the Prince Hall Grand Lodge. There is one recognized Prince Hall Grand Lodge in Florida, so they're concordant, so they work together. Mm-hmm. But there are all these other offshoots of people that might have gotten upset at the way things were done in one group, and they established their own. Other people just picked up books and watched movies, and they decided, oh, we want to start our own Grand Lodge. Well, that part of maintaining the sovereignty of that territory and the Atris, the power to maintain that cohesiveness lies on the shoulders of the governor and authority. In this case, in Florida, would be the Grand Lodge of Florida.
So we've already found one violation of the rule already. We said that the authority is under one state, unless there's two Grand Lodges in one state. Most of the United States, we have amity across the most worshipful Prince Hall Grand Lodges that are Prince Hall affiliated, and the regular, the mainstream, whatever you want to call it, the other predominant Freemasonry that exists as well. So that could cause some conflicts, but over the years that dust has settled. There's still, of course, recognition that has to be worked out, but for the most part, they all play nice.
Honestly, these days we see more, I hate the term, mainstream, but we see more mainstream Grand Lodges withdrawing recognition and fighting than we do, I think, between mainstream Grand Lodges in the U.S. and Prince Hall.
In all honesty, this is a simple topic to explain, which is why we have three or four episodes dedicated to exploring the differences of amity and recognition and clandestine masonry. So we encourage, if you're new to the program, if you haven't seen those episodes, including, I want to say, episode 100, I want to say, was clandestine masonry. So
episode 17 was clandestine masonry. Episode 100 was racism in the craft. But the two go hand in hand.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, we go deep into the conversation on 100 as well. So go check it out. You catch up on the easy to explain nuances of that topic.
I don't understand how I remember these episode numbers. That was so 7 years ago.
Eidetic memory of yours. Okay, so we got jurisdiction down. We've got sovereignty down. Let's talk a little bit more about this act of diplomacy that has to happen. So if each Grand Lodge is responsible, has the authority over its own territory of that state, how do they play nice? Why would they interact with even a neighboring state? What's there to benefit? Why don't you just put up the walls and say, leave me alone and let me do my own masonry? What is there to gain from acting like this UN, this confederation of jurisdictions? What's all behind that? Joe?
Sure, since I'm the guy who looks like he has the answer. I would say that, I would say that, a good answer is, Freemasonry, one of the rights and benefits you have as a Freemason is the right to travel and to visit other lodges. And Freemasonry was never designed to belong to just a city or just to a state or to a country or even to a continent. Freemasonry is a worldwide fraternal organization. So you have to have the ability to travel and to meet other brothers, and you have the rights to go into other lodges. So that talks about some of the things that make all of these organizations similar or have the ability to recognize one another. The simplest term we could use is the landmarks, right? Even though that's not a fun topic for me because every jurisdiction has different landmarks, but there are some basic landmarks that all of these jurisdictions agree to abide to until be able change. To recognize one another until they change or somebody gets a wild hair and changes it. But, there are some common criteria for Masons across the board that allow them to recognize one another. And that's both from, regular/mainstream to our Prince Hall brethren and vice versa, and then across state or national lines.
Well, you said something really interesting. If Freemasonry is universal, then why do we have so many different sovereign Grand Lodges? Why don't we have one Grand Lodge to rule them all?
So this is a taboo topic.
This would make things a lot easier.
This is an example of an innovation that attempted to occur. So what Brother John is talking about is the idea, and this idea did exist right after the American Revolution ended. There was an idea to form a Grand Lodge of the United States. Several brothers and lodges, very prominent people, wanted to form a Grand Lodge of the United States in order to, you know, one Grand Lodge to rule them all kind of thing. You got to remember, there was only 13 states at the time. But that fell through for many reasons, one of which, you know, people did like their own sovereignty. The Grand Lodge of Virginia was one of the first Grand Lodges in the United States. The Grand Lodge of Massachusetts, one of the first Grand Lodge of Pennsylvania, you know, these three big powerhouses in 18th century masonry didn't want to give up their cookies, basically, and say, you know, we have to then submit to a higher authority. The neat thing was, is that the proponents of it wanted to elect George Washington as the first Grand Master of the United States, but he declined because he said, hey, I'm going to go be president. That's a bigger job. You guys sort this out yourselves and let's move on. So that never occurred. I know it's been brought up many times, you know, over the decades, but it's not something that sits well, you know, with these jurisdictions that are very sovereign and like their sovereignty.
Well, and when you think of the cultural melting pot that is the United States, I mean, just between, you know, you look at places like California or Vermont versus like Texas, Florida, Alabama, you know, there's so many ways to interpret the Masonic experience based on the culture. And I'm not even talking politics, but no. A dress code in Masonry, whether you are in it for the fraternal aspect or in it for the traditional observance or solemnity aspects, like Masonry comes in so many different flavors. And we are privileged to live in the country with so many different kinds of people and so many different kinds of backgrounds and experiences that breaking things up at the state level enables, you know, a smaller section of people to have, you know, their own flavor of Masonry that fits the cultural construct within which they reside.
And I'm glad it worked out that way, because you do get to, again, the big comparison is, you know, federalism of the states compared to like one national body, right? So if we were in, for us people here in the States, if you were one big state of the United States of America, right, then the same rules would be universal, and you would not get the nuances. You would not get innovations, kept small I, innovations in Masonry of, you know, different jurisdictional things, different rules and regulations to try. And now with the internet, of course, when one sovereign jurisdiction does something, both positive and negative, it quickly goes throughout the internet, and other jurisdictions are like, did you see what they did? I either like it or that was bad. Let's not do that. Right. And you learn very quickly what experiments to run.
You either read it on Chris Hodapp's blog or you read something like it on The Past Bastard. Like, yeah. It's like one or the other.
Wow.
Well, that's kind of what spurred this topic, right? Is the concept of, you know, jurisdictions that have their sovereignty versus these national level organizations that have that overarching umbrella. And there are organizations within Freemasonry, and especially American Freemasonry, that do fall under that banner. You know, it's just interesting how some things are left to the state, some things let's make this big organization for, and the pros and cons and what's good and what, you know, is not good.
So you're talking outside of Blue Lodge Masonry then?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's, you know, after you figure out the mechanics of how that all works, then you have to think about, well, there's other groups of Masons that are nationwide. Do they have a similar administrative structure to them? For example, is there a Grand Commandery of Knights Templar in Virginia? Is there one in Maryland? And is there some sort of body that governs over them? I see.
Like a grand encampment.
Yeah, there are. Let's start with the easy ones, right? Because, okay, you know, if we're going to talk about appendant bodies, you have those really big easy ones. You have the Shriners, right? Shriners International. That is an international organization. So it's worldwide. And that's an easy one to talk about because they have sovereignty in their local their local temples, in their states, in their regions, and then worldwide. You know, I always like to bring the Shriners up because my mom's been donating to the Shriners for 20 years. She had no idea they were Freemasons. You know, but she's you know, it's a good example of a far-reaching international organization, and they really do have a top-down leadership approach, right? So it's a basically a corporation that runs at the top and manages the hospitals and then all of the charities below it. And then you get into some more
quasi-international. Which is why they're the only Masonic organization that's solvent.
Indeed, indeed. Mm-hmm. It's good to incorporate.
Sorry, go ahead, Joe.
No, I was just... it's a good point. I was just going from biggest to let's bring it down to the local level. So then we have things like national level appendant bodies. We have Royal Arch. So Royal Arch Masonry, and I know we've done numerous shows on that. Royal Arch Masonry is sovereign at the state level for most places. But here in the United States, we have something called the general grand chapter of Royal Arch Masons. And I did some research before we did this. 40 out of the 50 states are members of this general grand chapter. There are 10 states that are not members. Everybody recognizes each other. We all get along. Virginia is actually not a member of the general grand chapter of Royal Arch Masons, but we can still go to their parties. We can drink their drinks and, you know, dance with their ladies. So that's one organization. I'm going to save the best one for last. Somebody else. Yeah. Perfect. That's a perfect one. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, you know, you have individual councils made up of up to 27 members. You can have as many councils as you want in a, you know, given jurisdiction. But at the state level, you've got the, you know, you've got the, you know, the state jurisdiction, and then you have the Grand Council of, you know, Allied Masonic Degrees. And so I'm blanking on what the state body is.
But one pattern I found interesting here is that you have state level ones, but you also have a national level ones where you don't have that in Blue Lodge Masonry. We do not have a Grand Lodge of the United States for Blue Lodge Masonry, but yet it's not uncommon to see something equivalent to that in appendant bodies or other Masonic bodies.
Or even in other countries.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to Jason's point, AMD, there's a Grand Council of the United States of America, but then there's also Grand Councils in, you know, in the UK and things like that. So they're not super international, but, you know, it's one of those that has basically a national level footprint, and then everything gets done at the local council level. There's no in between, right? You're waiting for me to bring it up, so I'll just bring it up. Then you have another national level.
What Joe said, not what I said, because I was wrong.
Then we have another type. So another example is the General Grand Council of Cryptic Masonry. So they're this basically the same thing as Royal Arch Masons, where they have this national level general body, and then states can decide to be a part of it or not. You just pay extra per capita. So I guess that's what you do. You pay extra per capita. You get Virginia.
Except in Virginia, where we go like this.
Well, we don't even have a cryptic council. So, you know, so we save a lot of money.
We do not, but technically we kind of do. It's just all of the cryptic degrees are conferred by the chapter. The chapter has the ability.
That's why we got kicked out of those. That's why we're one of the 10 that didn't get invited to the party.
Yeah. We're not at the party. That's right. And then we have other types of organizations, and somebody mentioned it before, Knights Templar. They have sovereign state-level jurisdictions. We have the Grand Commandery of Virginia, the Grand Commandery of Florida, the Grand Commandery of Texas. But then there's also an overarching umbrella national-level organization that all of these Grand Commanderies owe allegiance to, essentially, right? Basically, if they're paying dues to it, you know, they're giving up some of their rights to have this overarching organizational structure. So it's kind of weird. It's different than all the other organizations where you basically have your grand encampment has this grand line, and then your states have their own grand lines, and they're sovereign. They can do all the commandery stuff that they want at the state level, but then they're beholden to this national level organization. So it's a really interesting dynamic that you basically have two masters that you have to bow to it every time, which is kind of weird.
Which that gets into some questions for me. Well, go ahead, Juan.
But that sounds just like the state and and DC. So it seems to be some similar dynamics. Well, we have a president, and we all have to follow whatever the president says. especially get your vaccines. Cling.
Juan, we just lost all of our followers in Alabama.
And there they go.
but
then we have the local, we have the states, and the states have a governor that has their own agenda. So,
well, to a point, I think. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead. Well, just one thing I've always found fascinating is how these other bodies can operate Masonic functions, or you know, you have to be a Mason to join them, while the Grand Master of that jurisdiction has the final say over what the Masons do in that jurisdiction. So here's what I mean by that: if you did not get along with the Shriners, for example, say the Grand Master of a state didn't get along with the Shriners, they have
not a hypothetical.
They have the full authority to say, any Masons that are in my state do not get to play in that sandbox. So this is where a little bit more of that politics and diplomacy really have to come into account, both positive and negative. Because that did happen, you know, as far back as 2018, 2012, somewhere around that time frame, where Grand Lodge of Arkansas and the Shriners International had such a schism that the Grand Master of Arkansas said, and if you are an Arkansas Mason, you are not, I repeat, not allowed to be a Shriner. Obviously causing a huge fuss about, you know, how does that work? If you were a Shriner, can you still be one? And it just became a whole thing. But again, this is why sovereignty is important, because that gave the Grand Master the authority to say that. But also, you know, there were also good men and Masons who weren't part of any, you know, scuttlebutt between the two organizations and were kind of hurt between that. So, you know, it really... The whole system works because of diplomacy, right? That we get to have all these other Masonic appendant bodies to operate, because if you tick off the wrong Grand Master, then you could be, you know, not allowed to operate within that jurisdiction.
Well, that's a great segue into, let's go back to Juan's example of, you know, that this Grand Encampment is run like, you know, our statehood system here in the United States. I would agree, except for the fact that the United States, you have laws at the local level, laws at the state level, and laws at the federal level. And sometimes they're not the same, right? I know a great example, driving through DC all the time, are the marijuana laws. You know, the laws for the state or the district or the Commonwealth are different than the federal laws, right?
You gotta toss it out the window before you cross the state line.
Right. Or you can't smoke on federal property, but 95% of the property in the District of Columbia is federal property. So, you know, you got to find that one manhole cover that you're allowed to stand on. Right. But I digress. But my point being, this is not the same, right? Because you have the Grand Commanderies and then you have the Grand Encampment. Basically, the Grand Encampment is pushing legislation down for mandate to all of the Grand Commanderies. So it's not like the Grand Commandery of Florida can have their own different flavor of stuff. If you're not doing things the Grand Encampment way, you're wrong, right? So, you know, it's a different level than the federalist system that we're talking about here, because it really is, you have two masters, right? You know, you have your Grand Commander at your state, and then you have the Grand Master of the entire United States, and you're paying taxes to both people.
Per capita assessments are theft. But it gets dangerous, right? When you actually have issues, it becomes this struggle of who's right, who's wrong. And we're seeing that even today. There's a lot of stuff going on in the world of the Knights Templar organization, and, you know, recognition of what CBCS, and then not recognition, and people who are members of both are kind of caught in the middle. It gets dicey.
I mean, they won't be members of both for long if things stay the way they are. So,
Right. But which way is that pendulum going to shift, though? You know, that's the interesting point there. It's that's what I mean. It's kind of hard, at least in my opinion. And, you know, I've not been a Mason for that long, only 16 years, but, you know, a puppy dog's age in today's day and age, right? And what I really struggle with is how can an organization survive with choke points at both ends, right? Both locally and from a national level, right? It's very restrictive, you know, whether it's positive or not. It's just, you know, it's just a restrictive environment to live under, you know?
Well, then okay, let's take the metaphor to its logical, like, worst case scenario, war. War is a diplomatic problem, right? When countries are at war with each other, there is loss of life, there's loss of resources, there's loss of public trust. I mean, there's just a ton of problems with war. So you try to avoid war at all times. But war does happen. And so all that, you know, building up this momentum and this infighting, the worst that it can do is actually harm the members at the end of the day. I know that I have been talking, to a couple years ago when there was a lot of debate on whether or not to pull recognition based off of the actions of other sovereign jurisdictions. So for example, if I don't like the way that you let in a certain type of individual in your jurisdiction, I can pull recognition from your jurisdiction. That was threatened and acted upon by a couple jurisdictions. Well, that only harms people.
Well, and it's interesting too, because the onset of the internet really has made these jurisdictions much more connected, and ultimately, regardless of whether or not Grand Lodges, you know, choose to recognize it, much less sovereign than they were.
It's public news. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's increasingly what happens in one grand jurisdiction. Yeah, the entire rest of the world of masonry, you know, not only hears about it, but also can weigh in on it. And I think a lot of some grand lodges recognize that, and they put a lot into like public relations and thinking hard about the future of masonry, and others still kind of hide behind this increasing facade of, you know, sovereignty and, you know, I don't stick my nose into your jurisdiction. Why are you sticking your nose into mine? And the sooner we flip the mindset to masonry is no longer the secret that it was 30 years ago, we are now very much in the public's eye.
There might be podcasts. Yeah, I don't want to, you know.
There might be podcasts. Yeah. Some idiots are going to talk about the new Dan Brown series. Like, yeah.
It's a nice secret society we used to have.
That's an amazing point you just made. I went to DC with a brother, one who's never traveled outside the state. So I thought it was awesome he came with me. So we went to DC and I did a program at a lodge. I saw some of our TMR friends there. And I did a program on the old charges and Anderson's constitutions. But we had a good 20-minute conversation about Grand Lodges, what their purposes were, why they were formed, things like that. And you really had some puzzled people when I was sitting there telling them, you know, the purpose of Grand Lodge was not to dictate how things were going to go. It was originally set up way back when in 1717 or 21, pick your flavor, to help lodges be able to talk to one another, to converse with one another. And the big thing, to have merriment and drink with one another, right? That was their primary purpose, right? All this other minutia and administration and business, that all came after, right? When people got in the way and started to bureaucratize it, if that's even a word. But, you know, that was the original charge of the Premier Grand Lodge, was to, you know, make holy the feast days and to have much celebrating. You know, that was its first edict. So it's kind of interesting that it's become that huge bureaucracy that it has been today, and it gets compounded when you're part of an organization that's, well, I not only have a mayor, I have a governor, I have a governor's dad who's still in charge even though he's not the governor anymore, and then I have the president here and all of his advisors who think they're in charge, and they whisper into this guy's ear and tell him what to do, and then I get 25 different laws.
So Juan, do you think the bureaucratic administration or overhead has gone too far?
In some instances, it may certainly feel so. And I think about this, some of the Federalist Papers come to mind. Like, part of the reason you wanted to have a representative in the Capitol was because you wanted someone who was closely in touch with the local populace and understood their strife, understood their difficulties, their challenges, and could go up there and voice their concerns. Now, putting together some sort of structure, some sort of diplomatic mechanism to allow that communication and that understanding to happen is helpful. But whenever there's a disconnect and you have, for example, career politicians whose only motivations now become retaining their power or expanding their reach, then you have that big problem of disconnect. People don't even know how much a gallon of milk cost in the local community. They don't know how difficult it is for some communities to get access to fresh food, local fruits and vegetables. So their decision making is happening in a very severe disconnect from what the need of the people is. So perhaps examples within some of these grand bodies could be that making decisions for the entirety of the organization without necessarily being in close contact with the local members of these groups and really satisfying their needs. So anytime you have a power structure that puts too much power into that upper echelon, then you start losing control because all you have is a dynamo of power.
And I like the way you said that. It's not so much a fear of authority, but it is definitely one of not knowing what the local level needs. Right. So the further you are away, the further levels of abstraction you have from the needs of a local lodge, for example, you really can't efficiently. I mean, you can still do it. You can still figure out business rules, processes, yada yada yada, how to vote and bring up resolutions. We've talked about resolutions in a recent episode. That
floor work.
The actual work, the actual ritual. There are ways to manage it, but it becomes, as an organization grows.
I said 62 degrees, not 64.
It has to add in more rules to be stable, right? To be repeatable. And that really starts to get away from the heart of what masonry is all about, right? It's to be good, to take good men and make them better, not to make sure that they adhere to section 4.2.7 of the Methodical Digest, only on Saturdays, except when there's a full moon and Virgo is aligned with Saturn.
And Mercury's
in retrograde. Yes!
There you go.
Jinx!
Get out of my head, Joe.
I thought I heard you say making good men better.
Making good men bitter?
Yeah, that's what it was.
But yeah, I think John and Juan, the two J's, we're all J's. You two guys over here hit the nail on the head. It's you know,
not this one.
Well, you always hit the nail on the head, but I have to prop up Juan because he's sad because he's leaving. But
leaving.
It's really you already said something.
You can stay if you want.
Yeah, you can. We'll keep your seat warm for you.
He's thinking about it.
We'll just get a cardboard cutout like they do at the baseball games. It's Juan. Yes. He didn't dye his grays today. Oh, look at that. Anywho, it really is. You're absolutely 1,000% right. It's the how far separated you are from the local things that happen. It kind of detaches you from reality and you end up getting to the bureaucracy and not the actual doing the masonry, right? And that brings me back, John, to what you said earlier. You like having things at a state level here in the United States. I think it works too, because I think a state is just enough of a good population size, and it doesn't get too weird from region to region, right? Everything is kind of sort of the same, and you have a good healthy mix of different perspectives to give you a good color for moving forward.
Yeah.
I think anything larger is bad.
It's a numbers game. There's under a million mainstream Masons in the United States right now, and yet even let's just say the Grand Lodge of Virginia, since I was on the membership committee, there's only about 30,000 members. So 30,000 is manageable, right? It's not a million that, you know, you just, they become literally a number, or you become one in a million Masons. But when you're much more lower level, you can actually get a feel. You can kind of see what works year by year. Mm-hmm. We already have people voting you back in, Juan, to stick around.
I saw that. I appreciate the love. Yeah. Now, for those who don't know, because I know on the last episode, I think I might have stated too pretty, and some people didn't get it. I got a little too fancy with the words. I'm leaving TMR. So for those of you who don't know, my last episode is going to be on September 30th, which should be 357.
Oh, so, yeah.
Should be.
Yeah, it's I can't stay any longer because it's going to wreck my numerology. It's 7 years and 357 episodes. I have to leave on that window or I miss it. But I love you all. And again, I want to make sure that I reiterate, Joe, I love you, brother. And I am super happy that you are a member of the Masonic Roundtable. My departure coinciding with your arrival is a pure coincidence. I just want everybody to understand that I just have to pursue more time with my business, thegentlemansbrotherhood.com, and that's it.
Mercury
which
will be
Joe is not a part of.
I am not a part of that business. Yeah. I am a patron of Juan's many businesses, but I am no way a member or a proprietor. But I love doing business with Juan. And just so everybody knows, there was nothing in the contract, you know, that I signed to join TMR that said that there had to be a quota on the number of Latino brothers. Oh, so we're good. Geez. Okay.
Oh wow.
I promise that we're
there
good.
Is a quota of one Great Dane.
There will always be one. So
maximum.
I invite everyone to maximum. Get a Great Dane. It's the most fun dog in the world, let me tell you.
Hey, we should get back on topic.
Back on
yeah, what are we talking about?
So we've covered.
We were talking about the Grand Encampment.
We're talking about power and war and bureaucracy. Shots fired.
Yeah, I mean, that got heavy pretty quick if you think about it. But that all comes with the territory. When you are a sovereign entity, you make your own rules, and it's up to you to play nice with others. And so, you know, it becomes a problem.
This is a doozy in this case, right? Because your sovereign territories have ceded that right over to a larger body, right? And then that basically being part of that grand national level body says, "I'm giving up my rights and powers so that you can do the management of it," right? So where's the line there?
Oh, so you're talking like Grand Commandery of the state having to
cede, right? So because power. You know, if you look at, again, we're using Grand Encampment as the example. If Grand Encampment comes out with a rule or an edict or a law, the Grand Commanderies have to follow that. There's no if, mm-hmm. ands, or buts about it. Let's take the apron, for example, right? So the apron that came down as, hey, you're allowed to use the apron, but we'll let the Grand Commanderies at each state decide which apron you want and how you want to wear it and what to do with it on Tuesday and all that stuff, right? But there are some edicts that come down that are very cut and dry. It's like, hey, Tuesday will be Purple Day, and that's the end of that, and you don't have any say in the matter. So you've ceded, even though you're sovereign, you've ceded some of your rights by being a part of that larger organization. So, you know, my question stands, where's the line?
Well, look at the drug laws in states, right? So they can contradict the federal, you know, Schedule C drug laws. That cannot happen if you are following a system like, you know, the Grand Encampment of the United States, because, you know, you can't create a law if you're subordinate to the other one. So you cannot create a law that contradicts that, right? Even in Blue Lodge Masonry, your bylaws cannot contradict the law.
The methodical digest.
Of, yeah, exactly.
Or the laws of your Grand Lodge. Yeah.
Human raison or whatever else. So, yeah. My graphic is gone. Rats. But yes, so you have to be careful with that. Mm-hmm. All right. I think that about covers anything else, so we will get right to the final question of tonight. And the final question for tonight's episode is, if you were grand omnipotent purveyor of the day, I'm making up a new position. How would you, if any, restructure or change the Grand Lodge or Grand Body system? Okay, so I'll give you a little bit to think about that. How, based, we've talked about all the pros and cons of doing that. And so if you were the beginning of the day, and Juan's chomping at the bit, or not Juan, go ahead, Juan.
The other Juan.
A different one. A Spanish expression comes to mind. Nadie sabe lo que hay en el caldero, nada más que el que lo menea. So nobody knows what's in the pot except for he who stirs it. And I say that because it would be presumptuous of me to say, oh, this is what I would change in the Grand, in the Grand Lodge or something like that. I'm not saying that it would be presumptuous to hear your opinion, because you guys may have more experience with grand bodies. Some of you have been members of the grand mix. So, but I think I hold a more, I don't know, I want to say it's not just diplomatic. It's like, I want to know more about how it all works on the inside, because I can understand there has to be some sort of order. There has to be some sort of hierarchy that helps keep the drum beat so that there's consistency within the craft and within the different bodies. So I understand that the intention is pure. The execution, however, just like you see in political bodies, like we've been discussing from the beginning, may not be as ideal whenever it comes to executing some of those intents. Some of it may be lost in the translation. So it almost sounds like a cop-out, but I wish I knew a little bit more of what really happens within the committees and within the meetings and within that whole very political process of climbing that ladder. So I'll have to leave it at that, but I am very thankful to see there's been a lot of activity in the YouTube chat. I do appreciate the nice messages. I am, of course, I'm sad that I'm closing this chapter with the Masonic Roundtable, but I'm very excited because of all the opportunities that have presented themselves and the structure that the Gentleman's Brotherhood is taken. For those of you who don't know, the Gentleman's Brotherhood is not a Masonic anything. This is just a company designed to help men in their progress to become a better man today. I am very practical, very pragmatic, as you know, with the application of lessons into one's life. And this is the fruit of that desire. If you want to know more, I definitely invite you to go check out thegentlemansbrotherhood.com or thegentsbro.com. And lastly, I also have a Patreon account dedicated to my efforts with the Winding Stairs and with the Gentleman's Brotherhood. So if you love what I do and you want to say thank you by supporting physically, you'll get access to all the perks that I offer in there. So just go to patreon.com/Juan Sepulveda. I'll be eternally grateful. Thank you, brothers.
Excellent. All right, Jason. What would you change, if any?
So there's my immediate knee-jerk reaction, and there's my more reserved, thoughtful reaction. Immediate reaction is that I would immediately promote universal recognition between mainstream and Prince Hall in every jurisdiction in the United States. That's my gut reaction. The knocking down barriers between Prince Hall and mainstream brothers, was a key thing that I tried to do in my year in the East. It's something that I'm very passionate about. As a man and a Mason, I think racial reconciliation is something that we desperately need, more of today. And so, that's my gut reaction. The problem is, you know, as Juan alluded to, the execution of that. I think that the Prince Hall Grand Lodge system, much like the mainstream Grand Lodge system, has a beautiful, gorgeous history and culture that deserves to be preserved. And so, you know, instead of, you know, advocating for Prince Hall and Mainstream to merge or even universal recognition, I would, if I were, you know, omnipotent Mason of all for the day, I would work to knock down the barriers between the two, keeping them sovereign. But the one thing that I think is beautiful, I think it's Wisconsin, and Nick Johnson can correct me if I'm wrong. I think it's Wisconsin is the only state where you can be a member of both the Mainstream Grand Lodge of Wisconsin and the Most Worshipful Prince Hall Grand Lodge of Wisconsin. And I think having more states where you could be a dual member, both in Prince Hall and the Mainstream Grand Lodge system, just think about how much it would open an ordinary Mason's eyes on either side to, you know, a whole new brand of masonry. And I think that experience is a beautiful thing. I think it's our duty as Masons to travel to different Masonic experiences and different jurisdictions to get out of our provincial masonry and make sure that we are understanding of the different flavors and the different types of masonry that are out there today. And we have an appreciation for the beauty of masonry, which is a myriad of different experiences, end goals, cultures, all bound together by the same initiatic experience with the same motto to take good men and just make them better.
You're getting lots of head nods here, lots of thumbs up in the chat. So kudos to you and that. So I support you when you become Grand Ruler of the Universe in all your Masonic endeavors. Cool. All right.
I will get expelled before that happens.
It's all right. We'll start one of those weird clandy ones that everybody talks about. You know, yes. Pyramid scheme. So, that was a fantastic answer, Jason. I don't think I can top that. But if I was the grand omnipotent poobah of the universe for a day, I would take a very American approach to it and basically say we live in an information age where information is at our fingertips. It's all near real time. You know, our lives run on that. So I don't think that you need the bureaucracy that we have nowadays. So if you do have let's keep it in the United States, if you have a state level organization, that's good enough, I think. I don't think you need, you know, the overarching bureaucracy of the national level things if you already have state level things that are doing their thing and doing things correctly for their own jurisdiction, for their constituents, for their people. So, you know, I'd be very George Washington about it and say, give the power back to the states and let them do their thing and save yourself the $6 and do something better with it. Get a cup of Starbucks like Juan likes to do. But, you know, it's, you know, the phrase that comes out in my mind when we talk about things like this is that power tends to corrupt and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And I don't think that anybody is immune to that. You know, whether you're a Mason or a devil worshiper or a businessman, you know, that is a very true axiom in life. And I think the more power people have, the less in touch they are with the people that they're supposed to steward. So if I was the grand poobah for a day, give the power back to the people, let them make their own decisions. You know, we trust them enough to take their money, so we should trust them enough to make wise decisions with it. So that's me.
But we don't trust them to have a drink at Lodge because that would be bad.
Boo.
Except in New Jersey. You guys are awesome. All right, let's see. So if I were Grand Poobah for the day, I'm going to take it one step beyond what Joe said, and I'm going to say that, you know, and I've said this before in other kind of the leaning out masonry episodes, like I think there should be more experimentation, especially because of our decline in membership, right? We've only got a few decades left of this great fraternity. And so now is the time to remove barriers to innovation. You see this happening already in things like the Grand Lodge of California, where they say it's only three steps to form a new lodge. Right. I mean, three steps. It's basically get the right number of people, pick a location, submit your application, go. And it should be that easy to innovate, to try something new within, you know, the landmarks, yada, yada, yada. Right. I'm not saying break the tradition, I am saying that for everything else, well, we should be experimenting more to find out what works, because as Joe said, word will get around pretty quickly if it's a dumb idea and we can scrap that and try something different. But you know, we're all starting off as good men, and we're all trying to be fraternal as we do that. And that will help promote, you know, I'm a fan of like the phrase, let 1,000 flowers bloom and see what happens. and then one last thing, do want to remind everyone to head on over here next week, right after TMR, at 10:45 Eastern, 9:45 Central. Check out our play-by-play of Dan Brown's Lost Symbol miniseries. We're going to go have a lot of fun, similar but different format, and we're going to really be trying to go through this journey. And if you haven't read the book yet, you have 1 week, because there's some really good stuff, and the teaser trailers already align very closely with the book. So maybe we'll dig even into both. So that'll be fun. Look forward to seeing you there. And with that, I want to thank you all very much for watching, and keep searching for more light. Have a good night.
Wow.